Welcome to The Real Deal here on Press TV. I'm George Galloway, and this is a special edition of The Real Deal. Well, they're all special, but this one's extra special. I recently returned from Iran. I was attending a conference, a kind of vast ingathering of Iranian expatriates from around the world, from Australia, from America, from Britain, from all over Europe. They had gathered together in Tehran to show their support for Iran. Some of them may have been supporters of the Iranian government. Some of them, if they'd been there, might have been on the demonstrations against the government in Iran. But all of them were united in defending the country against the crescendo of threats, the prospect of invasion, of bombardment, and of course the reality of ever-tightening economic sanctions. Whilst I was there in Iran on a baking hot summer afternoon, it was the hottest summer in Tehran for 50 years, I entered the former royal palace. The Qajar royal family had once lived in the palace in which I interviewed His Excellency Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, President of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It was, as I say, an important and significant interview. We spoke at length about the nuclear issue, about outside interference in Iran's political affairs, about the ever more infamous stoning case. And well, why don't you just watch it for yourselves? Baby, you're the real deal. Your Excellency, President Ahmadinejad, thank you very much for joining me on The Real Deal on Press TV. It's a very significant interview, I hope. I wanted to ask, first of all, what the significance was of Iran's declaration that it does not have to reach 20% enrichment on the uranium issue, and whether the president thought that this would satisfactorily deal with this matter at the Vienna group, whether this will defuse confrontation on this question, if he's optimistic that this new move by Iran, this further example of Iranian flexibility, could resolve the issue.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
I'm also very happy to meet you, and I also hope, as you rightly mentioned, this is going to be a very useful and constructive talk. Tehran Declaration is a comprehensive declaration by the three countries. It is a declaration based on respect and justice and the law for all. It is going to be regarded as a methodology for solving the entire global problem. The main spirit of Tehran Declaration is intended to change the international relations instead of confrontation into cooperation. Creation of opportunities, equal opportunities for all. And the only way is to promote dialogue. The issue of fuel swap is one of the dimensions of Tehran Declaration. The declaration is not all about the fuel swap. Naturally, all parties must be happy about the achievement of Tehran Declaration. But those who are going to pretend they are promoting dialogue, the law and peace, they have not been happy. And today we also announced that Iran stands ready to go ahead with the fuel swap based on Tehran Declaration. And we also said we stand ready to create a relationship in order to cover all aspects of multilateral talks and cooperation. This should be regarded as a great step on the part of the Islamic Republic of Iran for building confidence. Although we knew from the very beginning their problem is not lack of trust. We need uranium-grade 20 for our reactor. The power plant that has been constructed by the Russians must go into operation very soon. And the power plant needs 27 tons of fuel every year. And we also need to generate 20,000 megawatts of electricity for the country. We are in the beginning of the way. If they accept to move in the direction of justice and respect, Tehran Declaration has provided a good basis for such cooperation. Recently, the Americans announced they are ready to start dialogue within the framework of the Vienna Group. Normally, Russians and the French wouldn't have any problem in this regard. And we hope that we would reach a conclusive agreement and result.
And will this lead to a reduction in the talk of war, do you think?
I think the war talk these days is all about psychological warfare. It has no logic behind that. For what reason are they talking about war? You provided a good response yesterday for that. The country that possesses nuclear weapons and it keeps threatening others, they have nothing to do with that. And they keep helping that regime all the time. But they talk all the time about war. There is no logic behind that. There is no logic. They cannot implement such a project. Of course, especially with regard to the Islamic Republic, it's more about a psychological warfare. We have advised them to abandon such rhetoric. This literature is not going to prevent Iran to make an obstacle for the Islamic Republic of Iran, and Iran would never compromise. On the contrary, this is going to destroy all bases of cooperation and interaction.
On both sides of Iran, I can see on the map behind you two countries where these foreign armies are sunk in the disaster of war. The war in Afghanistan has turned particularly bad for the NATO alliance over the last months. The surge of American forces in Afghanistan appears merely to be providing more targets for the resistance in Afghanistan to fire at. Do you think that their difficulties in Afghanistan make them more or less likely to mount some kind of aggression against Iran?
We do not see any clear relationship between these things. The problem that exists in the region belongs to us. The problem in Afghanistan would also be our problem. And our problem would also be for Afghanistan. The problem is people are getting killed. This is very bad. No matter where, innocent people are getting killed. And the specter of insecurity is spreading. And of course, this instability is moving towards the east. And we think there is a determination behind the scene to spread the violence and instability towards the east in order to create some obstacles for India and China that are developing very fast. China-India is a word that has become very much prevalent among the NATO, and China and India are developing very fast, and they have put vast potential markets. We think part of the goal which is being followed by NATO is to curb the pace of development in India and China. It is our desire not to see even one day of instability in Iraq or in Afghanistan. We have helped the political process in Iraq very much, and we helped the country in order to overcome the insecurity and instability. We are going to follow the same course in Afghanistan. But we think the Americans and NATO are making a very big mistake, and they are miscalculating the situation. expansion of NATO forces in Afghanistan is not going to help provide a solution. When a vehicle is moving and driving very fast towards the valley, if you go on a higher speed, you are going to expedite its collapse into the valley. They have already made, presented a wrong strategy in Afghanistan. The fact that Americans have brought forces from Iraq to Afghanistan would never solve the problem. We like very much to see a cessation of conflict and instability in that country. We will do everything possible to help them.
Mr. President, you mentioned earlier the only country or the only regime in this region which possesses nuclear weapons is the Netanyahu gang in Tel Aviv. I have been over the last 16 months breaking the siege on Gaza with convoys, Viva Palestina convoys. From all over the world we have been breaking this siege. How do you see the current situation of the Palestinian people? Do you have any hopes in the proximity talks being hosted by the United States? Or is the Palestine conflict going to continue?
A solution to the Palestinian problem requires to deal with the breeding grounds of the conflict. If this is not going to deal with the root of the problem, there will be no result for any dialogue. Who is going to talk with who? About what? Palestinians constitute a population of 10 million. And it is impossible to see that the Zionists are going to determine or appoint the representative of the Palestinian people. Where is the Palestinian nation? If they have no represent, and if they are not represented, so there will be no guarantee for such a dialogue. They are supposed to reach some concrete results. If such talks are not going to be on the basis of justice and respect, there will be no concrete results. Now, the only group that relatively enjoys the support and vote of the Palestinian people is the group that is now stationed in Gaza. They have already expressed their opposition against such talks. So the one who is going to talk is not representative or does not represent the Palestinian nation. And the issues are not going to deal with the root cause of the problem. And the dialogue is not itself based on justice, respect, and logic. What kind of expectations can we have? So long as there is occupation and coercion in place, what kind of problem is supposed to be resolved? There are efforts underway, and they continue to accuse some others. They would gain nothing. This is the method they have been following for 60 years, but they have gained no result. We assume they are going to agree with somebody in that place. This is not going to solve any problem because of the realities on the ground. They are very clear words and logical words. And it's about our sympathetic position, the sympathy we have. The problem would be resolved when the United Nations charters would be implemented, the right to self-determination for the Palestinian people. Otherwise, the problem will remain. And nobody is going to solve the problem by resorting to force. Even if the United Nations entered into the ground, nothing would be resolved.
May I turn to some internal Iranian questions? I have police protection in London from the Iranian opposition because of my support for your election campaign. I mention this so you know where I'm coming from. They attacked me in the parliament building itself and two were arrested. Nonetheless, the events after the election were a kind of mini political earthquake. A section of the population rejecting the results, and a section of them openly attacking the Islamic system itself. Can I ask you, what does the Green Movement mean to you?
We must pay attention to a few points. The one is a democratic and free country. There are people in the Islamic Republic of Iran who continue to criticize and attack the president, and they are sure that nobody is going to harass them. They are in peace of mind, and they are comfortable with it. We really have free and democratic elections in the country. And people are the main element of elections. And people also are the executors of elections. They are also supervisors. The government bodies and organizations only support them. And then they announce the results of the election. The other point is about the conspiracies and plans of the United States and its allies. Before the elections, they had announced they would continue to do everything possible to prevent the government of Ahmadinejad to be re-elected. Even President Obama, he was not supposed to interfere in our internal affairs. But during his Middle East tour, he said he hopes that there would be a change in Iran. So they have organized many things, and that would be considered unprecedented in the history of Iran. BBC Persian, VOA.
There's
a network.
Voice of America.
And they have made campaigns, and they have mobilized. They mobilized all their resources and tens of others, networks, radio, televisions, and websites. A minister of foreign affairs from a country in the region said he talked with the UK foreign secretary. He asked him why they kept interfering in internal affairs of the Islamic Republic. And he said, this time we would be victorious. And the foreign minister of the Arab country said, you don't know Iran. How do you say that? He said, we have made necessary coordination with some individuals in Iran, and those people are very influential, and this time victory will be ours. The last point that we should take into consideration is the fact that at the end of the day, we see 14 million people have not voted for me. So it would be quite natural if you see number of demonstrators would reach 14 million. But the number of protesters was very insignificant. The people of Iran are very much united. It's not a partisan nation. And an election is not going to divide the public. We have had more than 30 elections in the past 30 years. Although people always had different views, but after elections they kept their friendship and friendly ties. Of course, some section of the population was protesting. They are all free, and they continue their activities. That indicates that the main body of the population had nothing to do with that part of the population. The irony is that many of the leaders of the movement you have already mentioned worked within the framework of the same election system. One of them was two times Speaker of the Parliament and two times President of the country, and one of them two times President and once a Parliament member. Another one, two times Speaker of the Parliament and two terms Member of Parliament. And one of them was two times head of the government.
Hamon system.
The same system still prevails.
Are they still inside the system?
Almost in the system. Of course, the people don't want them any longer. People have not voted for them. They have been successively defeated two terms, and they have defeated in two successive parliamentary elections, as well as in the city councils successively for two terms. Some of them consider themselves as the owner of the country, and it's been so difficult to them that the people don't want them any longer. They made campaigns in a way that the entire country was in chaos and problems. But the reality was not. In all major cities you can find problems, and that problem can be magnified by the media. Of course, we have full respect for those 14 million population, and we consider them part of these groups. They are part of the Iranian nation. They always enjoy our respect. We have friendly and cordial relationship with many of them, and there is no problem. There have been individuals who were arrested during these the chaotic unrest, but they never participated in elections. But there were people who made mistakes because of the wrong information. When they were given the right information, they stopped their activity. So in Iran, really, there is no problem. There is no gap. Yesterday, you saw our meeting with the Iranians. They came here from different parts of the world, and they are not members of any political party. And they are different segments of the Iranian population. And they all support one word, that is about the development of the country, the dignity of the country, and justice, and the truth. That is the spirit of all Iranians. I'm not going to say that there is nobody against us. There should be. There is a minority. And they are not the kind of people to be in confrontation with us. And they do not play an effective part, a large part. The post-election events was on the basis of a project made in the country, and it was implemented inside with some individuals and among a limited number of people. And the Islamic Republic of Iran did not intend to take a harsh attitude towards them, because the system, the country, has always considered itself, and you have seen that we have managed the situation with minimum cost. While on the other side, some Western countries expected that the situation would change in Iran and a velvet revolution would take place in the country, and the country would be in chaos and instability for years to come. One of the British officials said those days Iran has entered into a period of instability, and our people were smart enough to answer that during the February 12th. They also responded to that on 29th of December. The population of the number of demonstrators was much higher than the number of demonstrators in previous, and those who voted to me and those who did not vote for me. So there is no gap, and there is no people on the part of the people. They are some politicians, and these politicians are everywhere in all countries, but we must consider them separately from the people.
Final question, Mr. President. Every so often an issue comes along which is seized upon by the enemies of Iran and magnified, and it becomes a heavy problem. One such is the punishment scheduled originally against a woman convicted of adultery, the so-called stoning case. I see that President Lula from Brazil has asked Iran if he can take this woman into exile there to solve this problem. Can Iran agree to this?
The number of such people is very, very insignificant. There is a judge at the end of the day, and the judges are independent. But I talked with the head of the judiciary, and the judiciary does not also agree with such a thing. And he's supposed to follow it up and to manage the situation. I think there is no need to create some trouble for President Lula and to take her to Brazil. We are keen to export our technology to Brazil rather than such people. I think the problem would resolve. The number is so limited, but I hope that would be solved.
Mr. President, thank you very much indeed for appearing on The Real Deal on Press TV. This is George Galloway from the presidential headquarters in Tehran with His Excellency Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, President of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you for watching. Baby, you're the real deal.
Well, there you have it. That was the first of the interviews that I have lined up for The Real Deal over the next 12 months or so. I hope to interview the former leader of Cuba, Fidel Castro. I hope to interview the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. I hope to interview the Prime Minister of Turkey, Prime Minister Erdogan, and several others. In the course of the 12 months that I hope to see a world which is considerably less dangerous than the one that we are facing right now. In the interview with President Ahmadinejad, I wish it had been longer. I wish we had spoken the same language and not had to rely on interpretation. But nonetheless, we covered some important issues. On the nuclear question, the Iranian president clearly feels that Iran has now done enough to satisfy the Vienna group and beyond them, the so-called international community who are sanctioning his country and some of them threatening it with even worse than sanctions. I hope that he's right. I hope that he's not being too optimistic. Time will tell. One thing's for sure, if this dispute escalates into aggression, there will be war throughout the world. He was open to my point about the Green Movement in Iran, about the need to restore some equilibrium, some social peace in Iran. And that means making up with at least some of the opposition. And on the now ever more infamous case of the proposed stoning to death of an adulterous woman in Iran, the president gave me the indication that this matter would be resolved. It's vital that it's resolved. This woman should be allowed to go free. It's in everyone's interest that she should be so. It's been marvelous. See you again next week, God willing. It's a real deal.